Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Good morning and welcome to Morning Java, brought to you as always by Get Go Cafe and Market, where right now, Tom, they've got that pilgrim sandwich and I've been eating it up at Get Go this month. I'm taking every advantage of my favorite fall Get Go sandwich, and it's amazing. How you doing, Tom?
Wonderful, and always ready to always good to talk to you, Touchdown Maker.
Thank you. I'm Chris Carter. He's Tom Reed. Let's talk about the guy that used to be a Touchdown Maker for the Steelers. He got officially released yesterday, but it was announced on Tuesday. Le'Veon Bell, the team's former superstar running back, was released by the Jets after what has been a very interesting ride with the team. As everyone remembers, he was a star for the Steelers, that he didn't show up for the 2018 season. He hit the free agent market in 2019. The Jets signed him to a lot of guaranteed money, but he never took off there. Adam Gase, the head coach, said he didn't want him there in the first place, and that caused some tension there. And he averaged like 3.2 yards per carry last year. He didn't have a good numbers this year, and he was hurt. And then there was lots of social media drama, and then the team just cut ties. Tom, how weird has it been to see this kind of – I'm not sure if it's a fall from grace, but a guy go from, you know, being one of the most dominant players in the league to just bouncing around – and, you know, and we haven't even seen the head cases from him like we have from Antonio Brown.
Yeah, I think, you know, if I were to advising any NFL players, I don't think the Jets would be my first place I would send anybody for the last like 10 years. It's probably an evergreen statement. But, you know, some guys, you know, they see the money and that's what's going to define them. And they'll figure, well, we'll make it work from there. And sometimes guys get there and realize we can't make this work. That's been a mess. It's always hard when you get brought in and it just hasn't worked from the beginning. The Jets organization is a mess. Sam Darnold has not really caught on at all. I think I watch Sam Darnold. He's okay. And maybe it's just that they're kind of like where the Browns were a couple of years ago, that they're in such disarray. Of course, the Jets always are. And again, this is just when you're going into free agency and you get what you want, this is your chance, right? This is the chance to pick your team, to pick your place where you can be successful. And usually places like the Jets and the Redskins and, you know, the Browns in the past, you know, they're the ones offering the money. But with that money, a lot of times comes the dysfunction that you're not really thinking of when you're counting the money. And let's, you know, Le'Veon Bell is, you know, no matter what we're saying about him right now, has got paid a lot of money to not do very much. Maybe now with that bankroll, he can be a little wiser in where he's going to go, because there's no question, Chris, we saw it here in Pittsburgh, really good running back, such a really good multi-purpose back, and just to see where his career has gone, just on the field problems with the team. Is just it's amazing. I live in Columbus. He's from suburban Columbus, outside of Columbus, and such a good player to have just. And again, it's not injuries. It's not like he's old. It's just that he picked a really bad franchise and a head coach who seems like he's on borrowed time right now. I can't imagine Adam Gase is going to be there next year.
But where is he going to go? Because that's the next question. His career is not over yet. He's 28 years old. You know, that's around the age when you start to, you know, look at running backs and say, all right, what you got left, man? But, you know, a lot of Steelers fans were like, Steelers, bring him back. But we all know that's not going to happen. There's no way that's happening. But there's got to be locations in the NFL that are going to say, hey, come over here. We'll give you a shot.
Well, again, now that he's, you know, he's made his money, I think it becomes a pride factor at some point. You know, is this how you want your career to be defined, to the massive flame out? So maybe he's going to now look at teams. No one's going to, you know, no one's probably going to touch him, that contract. So he's going to become an unrestricted free agent, going to be able to go where he wants. You would hope if there's a guy who still wants to be a really good player to find a fit, to find a contending team. You would think that's what teams would kind of be interested in him right now, and go from there and maybe get his career going again. I don't know exactly what team. I guess there have been thoughts of maybe New England, maybe Miami, are teams that you've heard out there already. You know, New England would probably be a decent spot for him to go. We've seen what kind of success Bill Belichick has had, not always with guys that put up, you know, 1,000-yard seasons, but can be very productive there in multi-purpose roles. We'll see, but you're right. I think we can scratch Pittsburgh off. We know Cleveland doesn't need him because they've got two good backs when healthy. So we'll see, but it's certainly closing out a really sad chapter in his career.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
So, Tom, everyone knows now that the Pirates have the first overall pick in the upcoming MLB draft. And, of course, the guy that everyone's talking about is Kumar Rocker. And you wrote a piece about him that's on our website right now.
Yeah, it's just a quick, you know, he had some media availability along with his coach at Vanderbilt today. It's really the first time I think the Pittsburgh media has had an opportunity to talk to him since it's been clear now that Pittsburgh is going to have the first round pick. Funny thing today was kind of asked about the tank for Kumar hashtags that were on Twitter there last month or so in Pittsburgh and maybe some other cities. And he laughed about it. And he said, yeah, he saw that kind of stuff, but he's clearly focused on just trying to get through his last season. You know, what's weird, I don't cover a lot of baseball, but it's one of those sports where, like, he's not even going to be drafted until next July. We're used to, like, when we talk about guys who may be phenoms in different sports in football or basketball or even hockey, they're going to be here in a couple months, right? You know, the first round pick, Joe Burrow, you know, goes from being drafted to a couple months later being in the lineup for Cincinnati. You know, we may not see Kumar Rocker, if that's the choice, for quite a while. So, and I think he's got a very, very good head on his shoulders. He's in a very good program. You know, this is a kid that went through the draft process out of high school, decided he was going to go to college to a fantastic university, Vanderbilt, for education, first of all, but a tremendous baseball program. And, you know, that's a program that has produced so many great major leaguers. There's three, I think they have three pitchers in the NLCS.
Wow.
So he's in a good spot. I think if you're a Pittsburgh fan and you know this guy is probably not going to be your guy or maybe your guy for another year, I don't think there's a better place for him than at Vanderbilt with a coach that has produced a lot of major leaguers, with a program from David, from Price to all these different players who have been so good. I think it's a very good spot for him. And one other point on this is a guy who may be the second pick in the draft or top three or four, depending on which way they want to go, is also at Vanderbilt, Jack Leiter. So I'm sure the Pirate scouts will be spending a lot of time around the Vanderbilt program this year, taking a good long look at this guy because Leiter was really good last year as a freshman, albeit it was a very short season because things got wiped out pretty quickly. But it'll be interesting to see how this goes. And of course, he's like I said, Kumar is really just focused on this coming season and putting up the numbers that he put up when he was a freshman leading the Commodores to a College World Series. He's eager to show that he can do it again. And I think it's a good situation for Pirates and the fans to see him and Leiter as this season goes through. Hopefully, you know, as we say with COVID and all those things going on, hopefully if the season goes off fine, we'll start to get some better idea of where these guys are in February and March.
I think I agree with you there. The biggest thing for me is that I think the Pirates fans everywhere are concerned that, you know, they had to gut their last team that was any good. And now, you know, everyone's talking about the rebuild, but this pick represents the first real chance to get that rebuild going in the right direction with a superstar that's going to contribute and be part of whatever the next core is for the Pirates that could make a push. It does seem like it's important to me that this guy, that whoever they pick does come from a strong background and knows a winning culture, so that when he comes to the team and they're trying to change the tone of everything, that they can endure whatever hardships are going through, the team is going through, and then if they can get there, be able to perform and set that new standard that they want the ball club to be at.
Well, yeah, you raise an interesting point, because he's known a Rocker has known nothing. You still there?
Yeah, keep nothing, going.
Nothing but winning. I mean, he's been a winner his entire career. Tremendous success in college. And as we know in other sports, sometimes that can weigh on guys that then go to somewhere where the winning, you know, isn't automatic. Now you would think, I don't think this is going to be a guy that's we're going to see in the lineup next August or whenever he gets drafted. It means maybe a year or two away. So we'll see if the Pirates in the meantime can build up some stability around the organization before they actually get him. That I think would help them greatly in trying to bring this new guy in.
So, okay, final topic. Of course, Tom, we got to talk about the huge matchup this weekend. It's the 4-1 Browns versus the 4-0 Steelers. Never thought I'd say that, but here we are. The Browns coming off four straight wins, just like the Steelers. They got beat up by the Ravens in week one, and since then have gone on to win four straight. And they're coming off a big win against the Colts, where they were able to get a pick six on Phillip Rivers. The Browns lead the NFL with 12 turnovers, but the Steelers lead the NFL with 20 sacks. The Browns have the number one rushing game in the NFL. The Steelers have the number two rushing defense in the NFL. This has the makings of being a very good divisional showdown Sunday at Heinz Field.
Well, it sure does. And it's just so, you know, you have to go back to 1994. 1994, when both teams were at least three games over 500 when they met. That was the end of the season, like December 18th of that year. The year they played three times, they would then meet in the playoffs. The Steelers won all three of those games. And that was a pretty good Browns team. Sadly for the Cleveland, it was really kind of the beginning of the end of the franchise at the time, because they would announce moving the next year. Yeah. You know, this was a team – we talked at the beginning of the year about 8-8 was a good record for this team. Now they've gotten off to a good start. You know, they were blown out in the game that, you know, I don't think there's any shame in losing that game. But they have certainly found ways to win. And the biggest stat I see in this, in what has helped this team so much, is their run heavy team, right? They really like to run the ball, even with Nick Chubb out. They have only trailed during this four game winning streak for 30 minutes and 3 seconds. That's just not what we're used to when watching the Browns. Usually with the Browns, they're coming from behind to win games. But they have made Baker Mayfield kind of into that kind of game manager. He's embraced the role. They're finally starting to get, you know, some contributions from OBJ, who last year had such a hard time. I think he was kind of hurt all year. There was all kind of dysfunction with the team. He's starting to look like the guy that we recognized early in his career with the Giants. Now, Jarvis Landry's been a good player there the whole time. He just, again, with all the dysfunction, it's been hard. But the elephant in the room here, of course, is Myles Garrett. And Myles Garrett is having an MVP start to his season this year. I know I hate to say that to Pittsburgh fans, but he really is. I mean, both he and TJ Watt are both playing well, but Myles Garrett has had a tremendous start to the year. I think has forced three fumbles, has six yep. sacks, has recovered two fumbles, and is really on a defense that has struggled in many ways. Well, let me get to the point here, but he's just been terrific. I mean, it's a weird defense when you look at the numbers, because they're 25th in points allowed. So they're hemorrhaging points and yardage. But as you said, they're number one in takeaways. And a big part of it is the kind of the pressure that he's applying. And unlike in Pittsburgh, where there's three or four guys that can help TJ Watt, who I think is their best defensive player, he really doesn't have that. That's not a very good secondary. And you have to think that Ben Roethlisberger and that core of receivers is licking their chops to get at that Brown secondary if they can keep Ben upright.
Yeah, I think it's going to be an interesting challenge for the Steelers, especially because it looks like Kevin Dotson's going to be playing at right guard with David DeCastro's injury situation. But Jakumo Okorafor has been strong this year. Marquise Pouncey looks like he's ready to be back. They're also getting Stefan Wisniewski, so maybe he fills in instead of Dotson. We'll see how that plays out. You have to think that this is going to be a very interesting trench war. The Browns' offensive line has been very strong, but the Steelers have had the best defensive front in football. Again, they lead the NFL in sacks. And yes, Myles Garrett does have six sacks in five games. TJ Watt's 4.5 through four. They're both on that kind of a tear. I think it's going to come down to which stars on defense make more plays and who can avoid the turnovers. I'm really interested to see how the Steelers can put Baker Mayfield into those situations to force more turnovers. He's thrown four interceptions so far this year, and he really hasn't played – you know, the Colts were a good defense, but I think the Colts are also living high off the hog of where they've been early on. I'm not so sure that they'll sustain that. But he's thrown four interceptions, so far this year. Ben Roethlisberger's only thrown one, and he's been much more efficient with the football. I think that the compared efficiency as far as who will make more mistakes against the opportunistic defenses that both these quarterbacks face is going to be a huge turning point for whoever can win this game.
Yeah, I agree. And one of the things that in talking to some people around the league at the beginning of this season, before the season started, this is a different Ben than we're used to seeing. He's an older Ben. He's not the guy that's going to run around all the time. And I think one of the things that has been very interesting, and DK brought this up in his column, and I saw this stat over the weekend, is that he's getting rid of the ball much quicker than we're used to watching him get rid of the ball. I think he's in the top 5-6 in the league in just getting rid of passes. Now, of course, he's throwing a lot more short passes than we've seen. Maybe part of it is because he's not hitting on the long ones, but he is getting rid of the ball quicker. And I think that even people that like Ben, sometimes it's just like, oh God, Ben, just get rid of the ball. He loves to try to hold on to it and make the big plays. This year, he seems like he's taking what's there and getting rid of it. We saw that in the game in Philadelphia, 16 dropbacks in the second half. He didn't get pressured on any of them. Now that's a function of the offensive line playing well, and B, he's making quick decisions. I think he was getting out of 2.02. You can't sack a guy that's getting the ball off at 2.02. So we'll see if that continues. Or if you wonder again, he looks at that Brown secondary and says, oh, just give Claypool or give Deontay a little bit more time. So we'll see which Ben that the Steelers get on Sunday. But again, everyone knows what Ben's record against the Browns is.
Hey, the Steelers haven't lost to the Browns since 2003 at home. And right. That's a remarkable number. There are over 13 Whipple schools with more wins at Heinz Field than the Cleveland Browns. We'll see if the Browns can get their first win since Tommy Maddox was the starter on Sunday.